Interstate Batteries offers a wide variety of batteries for your everyday needs. Stop into one of their thousands of retail locations and talk with a battery specialist about batteries for your truck, trail cameras, and even those weird batteries for your rangefinder. Interstate Batteries even offers cell phone repair in certain locations. For more information, visit interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
This episode is brought to you by Outdoor Class. Outdoor Class is an online video platform geared towards making you a better hunter. Watch instructional videos taught by hunting experts like Remy Warren, Randy Newberg, and Corey Jacobson. After the hunt, learn how to prepare your harvest from world-class wild game chefs like Hank Shaw and Jamie Tagan. Whether it's your first year hunting or you grew up doing it, Outdoor Class will take your skills up a notch. Use code EMPIRE20 at checkout to save 20% off. Visit OutdoorClass.com to learn more.
The Houndsman XP Podcast Network is taking you on the journey. Your host, Master Trainer Heath Hyatt, will combine his decades of experience as a houndsman and as a professional trainer that will light the path forward and make our packs lighter on this lifelong journey to become better hunters and houndsmen. There are no shortcuts, so lace up those boots and grab a dog leash. The journey begins now.
Hey guys, the journey on Houndsman XP is teamed up with Go Wild. Go Wild is a social media platform that was made for hunters by hunters. If you guys and gals have listened to any of the other podcasts that I've been on, you know what a huge outdoor enthusiast I am. I love being in the woods with my hounds. There's nothing more exciting than hearing the thunder of a spring gobbler. I love fishing for trout in the brooks and the streams, and I love being on the river chasing that ever-elusive fish of a thousand casts, the muskie. Go Wild is the place that I can post my trophies, hunts, and memories without being censored. But Go Wild is so much more than that. It's a place to share your stories, sharpen your skills, hone your tactics, get gear reviews, and shop for anything outdoors. When you make a purchase from the Go Wild store, everything is free shipping. Anything that you purchase anywhere in the country, no matter how big, free shipping. So go down to the show notes, click on the Go Wild link at the bottom, and get signed up today. And let's go wild. On this episode of The Journey, we are going to have a familiar voice back on with us today. He's been on several podcasts, actually, and we always enjoy talking to him, a wealth of knowledge, and we want to talk to him about some of the hunts he's had this fall, wrap up some dog stuff. And just going to have some good conversation about some things that he's posted. And I know everybody don't follow him or get to see some of the stuff that he posts, but it's always very intriguing and interesting to me. So how is things up in Maine today, Mark?
Well, it's been a heat wave, very unusual weather. I think I wouldn't be surprised if the sun was about 80 degrees the other day. Today was hot as well.
Well, you say that. So today, I was off work today. It was one of my we call it an extra day off. And so I was off today, and it was raining a little bit. It rained last night, and actually it rained enough to, I mean, it filled the feed bowls up about half. So we got quite a bit of rain last night. And then this morning, it let up, and it was supposed to be done by 11 o'clock. So we decided to take a hike. And so I took two young dogs. I took a five-month-old and one of the eight-month-old pups. And basically we did some scouting, actually. So we went and we scouted this one area. We walked four and a half miles and just looking for food. The food crop had been really good. And I had seen some bear sign back during the early season. And I did not see it today, but it was 80 degrees. I mean, my shirt when I come out of the mountain today, was literally drenched.
Yeah, it's the same here. I mean, the ticks came out, you know, deer season's on, but I wouldn't even wanted to shoot a deer and try to take care of it in that heat.
Well, I mean, I was thinking the same thing. I mean, our muzzleloading season come in this past weekend, and I'm like, even if you killed a deer, I don't know how you'd get it out of the woods, get it taken care of, and get it hung up and cooled off without ruining it.
Yeah, it's rough temperatures for sure.
Yeah, and I kind of wondered if y'all were having the same thing up there, because this week has been extremely warm. Well, the last four days, of course, a front come in last night, and of course it rained, but your taxidermist, is that kicking off and doing well?
Yeah, that's bear season's pretty well over with here, and you know, the deer heads are rolling in, still processing bears from bear season, and still got a few moose in the freezer. I'm trying to get through those. And, yeah, it's, you know, the warm weather, you get stuff, you're working on it, and it's just working against you. So you got to work twice as fast.
Yeah. Do those guys that bring the moose, that's something that's on my bucket list. By the way, I want to kill a moose. When we used to go to Canada and hunt, our guide up there would always feed us either moose burgers, or his wife would fix spaghetti or something with moose meat. And I mean, I always thought it was really good.
Yeah, it's excellent. Excellent table fare.
So last year, me and one of my buddies put in for a Maine tag. And, you know, if you put in, one of you draws and both of you can go, but it didn't work out. It didn't, you know, I didn't do it this, I haven't done it this year. I guess it'll come up in March. But that is on my bucket list. I always see them when we hunted in Maine a couple years ago. Well, it's been a lot of years ago. And I think that was the only thing we ran while we were up there was a moose.
Your dogs, you know, if you haven't been around moose, it's a tough ball game. Because, you know, you're coming into bear season opens, the hound season, right when the moose rut really kicks in. And those bulls are rank. And I'm telling you can smell them by the nose, you know, 300-400 yards away.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really hard on even seasoned dogs that have been around moose. You know, sometimes they'll strike one here or there, you know, you can usually tell, but guys that haven't been around the moose, it's rough.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm pretty sure that we didn't run no bear as far as I know, but we did have a pretty good moose chase.
So, yeah.
But now, let me just go back and clarify stuff. So we're with Mark Dufresne, and Mark, you are a guide, and you guide hunts. Now, do you just do bear hunts?
Yeah, you know, I'll do some moose hunts, but I've got to have the right guy. I like to, you know, for many years, a lot of moose hunting was done just driving around on the vast series of logging roads and stuff. And you could shoot nice bulls, but it's kind of a different world now. You got to get out and you got to hunt them like they're deer a little bit more and get into the kind of the back country and plan on packing them out. And if you do that, you know, you can have a great hunt, but a lot of guys don't want to try. They're just overwhelmed by the thought of packing one out. So if I get the right guy, you know, I don't mind guiding a moose hunt, but of course it's right during bear season and usually I'm pretty well booked up. But I help friends out a lot, and you know, I'm out there right when the rut's on, so I see a lot of bulls, and I'll give friends tips on where there's a big bull hanging out, because they don't move a lot right when they're right in the rut and they're kind of anchored down there. You know, they stay in a real small area, and if the cows are right there, they tend to stay pretty tight to them, so you can get them if you work at them.
And I thought it was strange when we applied last year, like they made us give our top 10 units or sections. I don't know what y'all call those.
Your zones.
Yeah, the top 10 zones. And of course, you know, reading up on it, you know, we were trying to make an educated, you know, pick. A lot of people that had commented on some of that stuff, they always give them their last their last couple of picks. Either they give them their eighth, ninth, or tenth pick.
I typically only put one pick in, one or two, because I'd rather hunt those zones or nothing, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, it's on my bucket list. I'm going to keep trying.
It's a great hunt. Boy, when you bring one in on a string and he's raking and grunting to you and you're interacting with him, it's pretty awesome. It's right up there with like an elk coming in bugling. I mean, when them bulls are really slamming the old grunts down and hitting trees, it's fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, I haven't got to experience that yet, and I hope I get to experience it before my time ticks away. But they're a beautiful animal. They're huge. I mean, they're huge.
Yeah.
I about hit one in Canada coming around a curve, and a cow would run across the road, and it was all I could do to get locked up.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, man, if she comes through the truck, it's done. Like, it's done.
It is. There's a lot of people killed every year, you know, with moose car collisions because they're so tall that basically what happens is it takes the legs out from under them and they come right through the windshield and crush the driver. And they tend to, like, they'll open on a car, four-door sedan or something like that. The whole roof will be just peeled right back like a can opener. I mean, it's a rough deal when you hit one at 60, 70 miles an hour.
Yeah, I can only imagine. That's something I prefer not to do, for sure.
it's usually fatal, you know, at those speeds.
Yeah. No, that's like hitting another vehicle.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's so what's the average moose up there? Is it 800,000 pounds?
Yeah, you know, 1,000 pounds is a stud. Mm-hmm. You know, we kill some of them every year, but you know, I would say typical mature bull, you're going to be 800 to 900 pounds. You know, pretty common to be right in there somewhere. The racks, you know, they haven't been quite as good as they used to be in the past. Used to be pretty easy to kill like something in the mid 50 range for spread. And now I think your average is probably down more around 40 inches. There's still great bulls out there killed every year, but you definitely got to get in the back country and get away from the roads and the people to kind of isolate those bulls and work on them.
Yeah. I've seen a couple guys post some pictures, and now that you say that, the spread did look, I guess, less than average. The couple of them I seen were not, I would say they were probably in the low to mid 40s, if that.
Yeah, there's a lot of bulls killed that are in the 30s, mid 30s. That's going to be your young bulls. And typically, like, if a guy's calling, those bulls come in. I mean, they just come charging in. They're wild. You know, they're trying to get there before the big boy, you know, hears that cow. So they're trying to swoop in there and steal her. And, you know, so a lot of those bulls get killed. But they're really just sort of the satellite bulls. You know, a lot of the times when you're working a big bull, you'll have three or four of those small 30, mid-30s. You know, those bulls will be hanging around the fringes. But, yeah, they're the first ones to usually die because they're pretty careless and just come charging into the cow calling.
And the guys can't take the temptation. They see the bull, and they got to have it. Yeah.
You know, and I'll tell you what's funny is every year I see it, guys get panicky. Like the first 3-4 days are hot and moose do not move when it's hot. Like you got the first half an hour, last half an hour, middle of the day, you might as well just go scout new country and look for, you know, rut activity and rut pits. And then basically almost every year, you know, there'll be one day that you get a frost. And when you have that frost, it's magical. I mean, the bulls are just, you'll have five or six of them talking to you. But guys tend to get panicky, and by Wednesday, they're going home. They give up. They haven't seen a bull. They haven't seen a moose. And they just leave Wednesday night. I'm going home. And Thursday, Friday, Saturday, it's like a ghost town in most of the zones.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully it'll work out, and I can draw a tag and then get up there and get me one. I think, you know, we had talked about actually, you know, taking a trip. I think our summer trip this year is going to be up to Maine.
Nice.
Is it Arcadia?
Acadia.
Oh, Acadia. Yeah. Acadia National Park. Yeah. It's a pretty picturesque place. Tourists are there, you know, it's going to be busy, but, I just had some friends, Todd Boswell from Michigan, that just came back, him and his wife, Jackie. They kind of hit the tail end of the leaf peeping season, and they were just blown away. You know, if you want to get out and hike, tremendous places. I mean, you can get up on Cadillac, watch the sunrise, you know, the bubbles in Jordan Pond, and the Beehive Trail. I mean, there's a pile of great spots, really pretty.
Well, I think we're going to hit that, so I may have to pick your brain later on about it.
Absolutely.
So, I just wanted to talk to you about your season. And like I said, I've kept up with your post, and I keep up and watch. And you know, the hound world is so small. I know that you met one of my friends up there. BB said he was up and y'all had got together for some reason or another. And
yeah, I needed some cephalexin for a dog. And I, in my haste to pack up and head north for the opening week, I'd left my big bottle. And of course, the first bear I ended up getting on kind of put a few holes in everybody. So I knew he was down the road, had a mutual friend, and he was only, half an hour, 45 minutes south of me there. So I ran down, grabbed some pills that saved me a lot.
Yeah. I mean, networking is such a, it's such a valuable resource for us.
Oh, it's huge. Later that week, I've had to do a lot of vet care on my dogs, and I'm pretty good at suturing, and he got kind of wrecked on a bad one. And, he brought two or three dogs up, and I sewed them up later in the week for him. So, it's great if you can work with a friend and help each other out.
Yeah, and I guess, so is y'all season still in?
Maine is done. Basically, the Friday before the deer season opens on the Saturday, that's when Maine season is done. Mm-hmm. And I typically hunt some over in New Hampshire. They've changed their laws a little, but I can go over and participate. I can't bring my dogs over anymore, but they end Tuesday. So I've been over there a few times just to hang out and goof around. And we're pretty well winding down. The bear season's pretty well tied over here.
Yeah, so I guess it was about mid-October. Yeah, I was actually down at BB's hunting. And another buddy, my buddy from New York, Bob, he called me. Him and Frank Marcello was hunting, and I'm not sure. Yeah, so you know Frank.
Yeah, I know Frank, yeah.
So him and Frank were hunting, and Bob called. I was actually on my way home from BB's, and he called, and he goes, hey, he's like, I got a guy that lives down, around you up here. And I'm like, oh, yeah. And he goes, you know Ray? And I'm like, yeah, Ray Shanks. And he's like, yeah. He said, we were up here having a conversation, and he was hunting with the same group or outfitter or however that works, and he said, he asked if I knew you, and I was like, well, yeah, I know him. I was like, we're pretty good friends. And I'm thinking, that's when it come to me. I was like, on the East Coast, I'm sure it's the same on the West Coast. It is a small world.
It is really small. We get smaller all the time.
Well, it's definitely not growing by no means, is it?
No, sadly.
No. But anyway, it kind of hit me out when I was, I was like, man, it's like, don't matter where you go or who you're with, somebody knows somebody that knows somebody, or you're going to run yep. into somebody. So that you're going to need, like you and BB kind of worked that out, you're going to run into people that, may need some help or something from and can return the favor. And
exactly.
It's a good community for the most part.
It is great, great people. And, that vet care I did on his dogs, I have a pretty extensive kit that I carry, med kit in my truck, and lidocaine and everything else, sutures, and I have all that stuff right in my truck. And I probably, he would have had to spend, if he went to an emergency vet, I bet you'd have been in the $2,000 range for those dogs by the time you were done.
Oh yeah, we've discussed that numerous times on here that it's hard. I mean, it's hard. Yeah. You get one or two dogs hurt and spend, $1,500, $2,000, man, it wipes you out.
It sure does. Yeah. No doubt.
But before we get talking about dogs, one of your posts, you posted, you had made a post about, and I think, do you have a female named Slew?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I do.
So you had talked about her, and we're going to get into that in just a minute, but this is what really hit me with your post. You talked about the walk into the tree or the bay up. I don't remember which it was. And it kind of hit me. You know, you were talking about the scenery and, you know, how beautiful it was and, you know, just taking that in. And, Mark, when I was younger, and I hunted with some old-timers, and basically at daylight, you left the truck and you busted hump till you got to where you were going. And it was pretty much, and I mean, you wheeled it all day long. Like, there was no, you know, taking your time and kind of enjoying your surroundings and taking stuff in. And a couple of the guys that I hunt with knew, you know, hunted with me back then or was around me or hunted enough with me. Sure. In the last couple of years, they said, you know, Heath, you really slowed down. And I'm like, well, part of that's my age. You know, I'm not in as big a hurry as I used to be. And I enjoy that, you know, taking those slow walks and taking nature in and, you know, I don't know how to explain it, but the calmness and the just how it makes you feel.
Oh, it's a, you know, it's a great thing. And I think some of that comes, you know, with age. Like you, when you're young, and I was the same way, I mean, just going daylight till dark, and you didn't take in a lot of the small things sometimes. And, you know, that particular day, the situation was, it was our second hunter for the week. We tagged the first one out pretty good. Had a good little hunt for him, and we'd had a couple of days of rain and just bad luck, and you know, we had a nice day and we had a good bear race and got one treed, and it was a spot along Buffalo Stream that is it's pretty hard to access some of that country. Like, it's a lot of water. That's what we call down east Maine, and you know, we affectionately call it the jungle. It's thick, it's rough country, a lot of water. I mean, you're wading or swimming about everywhere you go. And, you know, we got that bear treed and we got in there, and of course we were all business kind of getting in there. But once we shot that bear, I tell you what, I just sat there looking around and the pressure was off. You know, we tagged out our clients for the week. That was, I think it was a Friday. And I was like, this has got to be one of the prettiest places. You know, that country, it's different. You know, you don't have the views from the mountains and the beautiful spots, but there's a beauty to the swamps and the remoteness to it and the bogs. And I just sat there looking around and I thought to myself, if a man had a cabin sitting right on this hump, it was just this beautiful piece of, you know, high ground, and the tree that bear was in. Everybody jokes that there's no trees big enough for the bears to tree, and that's why there's so many on the ground here. Well, this thing was about 6 feet through. It was giant. I mean, probably 150-year-old white pine, and pine needles were 10 inches deep, you know, and just a beautiful sunny afternoon. It was cool, and we'd walked across this open bog, and luckily, those bogs, if you keep moving, you can kind of stay dry. If you stand in one place, you start to sink, and you know, you don't know how deep you're going to go. So you know, we just kind of hustled across there, but it was beautiful, 400 or 500 yard wide open stretch, and of course you can see out in those bogs, and there was moose rut pits out there. There'd been bulls raking, and it was just a cool spot. You know, the water was glistening in the sun, and the little breeze blowing, and honestly, like, after we killed that bear and the pressure was off, I sat down at the base of that tree. The pine needles were as soft as a feather down feather comforter. And, you know, I sat there for probably 15 or 20 minutes and just took it in.
Yeah. And is that where you took the picture at?
Yes. Yeah, right there, right where the bear fell, pretty much.
Well, I'm using that picture as your cover for this podcast because it was absolutely stunning.
Yeah. Yeah, it really, every place has a unique beauty to it. And it's hard to explain what down east Maine is like with those bogs, but that was as pretty a place as I've been, even in the mountains and stuff. It was a unique spot, and just a bluebird afternoon. You know, we'd had 3-4 days of rain, and we were just, you know, we'd been slogging through swamps and water and wet, and then we come out to that beautiful spot, and it was pretty uplifting, you know. Pressure was off, and we just kind of soaked it in. It was, you know, it was like 10 or 11 o'clock. We had the bear killed, so we had all day to get it out, and we packed it out and quartered it up right there on the banks of the river, and we all headed out.
Well, and that's one of those places that hunter will never forget.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's it was a neat spot. I mean, even me, I won't forget it. I mean, it's just a beautiful spot, you know. And how long had it been since a man had stood there? I couldn't even tell you.
Well, that's something I try to do more now that I'm a little bit older, is take those things in and not get in as big as rush. And even when my dogs are treed, I mean, I used to run, hightail it. I mean, I was almost sprinting to the tree.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And I don't do that as much as I used to. I still, like you said, I kind of do business to get in there, but yeah. I'm not afraid to stop and take a breath either.
Yeah, you know, you have to. As you get older and you get a little fatter and you get a little slower, and, you know, you can't charge like you used to. But, you know, the other thing is, too, is, you know, I've guided for a lot of different guys here in Maine, and I've done the trophy hunts, and it's a whole other ball game when you got guys paying high dollar hunts and big, you know, wanting 300-400 pounders, and they're all on the ground. Where I'm hunting right now, with my friend Brandon Sals, he owns a little guide service, Lord Mountain Guide Service. And we try to kind of key in on the guy that just wants a good, honest bear hunt. He wants to get away for the week. He wants to spend it, you know, just shoot a nice mature bear, but it doesn't have to be. Sometimes we kill 500 pounders. Sometimes they're 150 pounders, but it's more about the hunt and the journey to get there than it is the kill. And I like that. It's a lot more laid back. You know, we tend to, if we haven't got anything going by noon, we tend to wrap it up, and we might go around, do some fishing or take them for a little sightseeing over to some waterfalls and stuff, and go look at just a few overlooks over the bogs that are really neat out there. So it's a little more fun to me. As I get older, I find myself enjoying those hunts a lot more.
Well, it's about, you just said, it's about the journey. It's about the process. It's about, you know, taking that stuff in and living life to your fullest. I mean, that's, like I said, that post kind of caught me, and I'm like, you know, Mark's hit the nail on the head here. Like, we got to slow down. We've got to start enjoying our environment and enjoying what we see. And, you know, you posted, I think it was that same post, you said that, you know, these dogs and these bear take us into places that most people never see.
You'd never go there.
Nope.
And when you get there, all of a sudden it occurs to you, this is magnificent, you know, and the fact that probably very few people, they avoid those areas because they're so hard and so remote to get into, that there's a uniqueness, you know, to the fact that you're one of the few people that's probably ever stood there. And that's, in this world right now, that's a rare thing, to be able to stand in a place where very few people have ever stood. So I try to take that in when I end up in those, and the dogs, you know, they're masters, the dogs and bears, I should say, they're masters at taking you to those places.
Yeah. And that was, you know, that was one of the things that intrigued me about the hounds and hunting with hounds. And, you know, that was one of the things. And I can't, you know, like you said, go to places that, you know, most people never walk. No people, yeah. Nobody goes in these thickets that we do. And it opens up into, like you said, this, you know, God's living room.
Yeah.
I mean, because exactly. That's what it opens up to. But
when we left the truck, I mean, it was the typical put your head down and just start bulling. Mm-hmm. And we didn't go about 70, 80 yards. And all of a sudden we got on the, and I said, well, usually a lot of the rivers, you can walk right on the banks of the river as long as the beavers haven't dammed it up. So mm-hmm. I said, we'll cut right to the river. And all of a sudden it opened up into that just a magnificent bog. And, you know, there's so many little things that you don't even notice until you slow down. The pitcher plants, you know, all these bog plants, it's such a hard living out there that they actually, they're carnivorous, you know, they're catching insects, the sundews, there's these little things, you're walking over the top of them, stepping on them, and all of a sudden you stop and you look down in a pitcher plant and you pour it out and there's all sorts of flies and bugs in there. I mean, it's just a unique environment and it's really worth slowing down to enjoy it a little bit.
Yeah. All right, before I ask you about the dogs, I know you're an avid reader. What book are you reading right now?
Let's see. I've got a stack of about six. I just finished one on genetics. That was a doozy. that was a deep trail down a hard path. But I did gain some good information off of it. Got some great stuff. I'm actually kind of looking for the next one right now because I just wrapped that up, and I've got a few that I'm kind of looking at, but I haven't settled in on one yet.
Yeah, so one of the books that I'm getting ready to start, and it's an older book, but I heard it on another podcast, and I'm like, I'm going to give this a try. It's called Don't Shoot the Dog. Karen Pryor is the author, and you know, she goes through, like, there's 22 different stages of training and stuff that you can do to help the dog and help communicate better with the dog. It is a lot of positive reinforcement, which, you know, we're about. But anyway, that's kind of what I'm, you know, reading right now. And I know, you know, like I said, it's kind of old. She introduces the clicker, which, you know,
just because it's old doesn't mean it doesn't have valuable information.
If I can take one thing away from it, it'll make me better.
Yep. Listen, I'll read anything. The King Ranch Quarter Horses was a magnificent book. Snakefoot, The Making of a Champion. That was a bird dog book.
You put me on it. I've got it laying here on my coffee table. Yeah.
Awesome read and just different people's approaches to training and picking puppies and whether it's, you know, the King Ranch Quarter Horses was really fascinating to me on the way they maintain their line and how successful they were and the outside blood that they brought in and really some great takeaways from that book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually got that book after you and I had talked about it. And that's one that I have not opened up yet. I had bought a book on breeding, and it was, oh, Lord, this book was a 1927 book. And I actually sent you a picture because I found it at the an old bookstore in Beaufort, South Carolina. And it was a hard read. It was hard. The chapters or the chapters that you were interested in and stuff was easy, and then when it started breaking down some of the scientific stuff of it, I struggled.
Ooh, yeah. That was the one I just finished. I mean, I honestly, to get through it, I actually had to kind of glean through the information. And when it really got into the deep math of it, I just avoided it because it was over my head.
Yeah.
Well. But I did get some very valuable pieces out of that really explain some things to me, and it was worth it. I can't say I enjoyed that book, but it was a great book to read.
Well, it's an information seeking task. That's what I tell myself sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely.
Looking to draw information. All right. Well, we probably bored the listeners about our regular stuff, but so tell me the story. You talked about Slew in that post that I had read numerous posts that you have put up.
Sure.
And some of them are lengthy. I mean, good, like very good stories. And like, there's always an aha moment. I think with your stories, Mark, and that, you know, that's what, like I said, that's what intrigues me and interests me. And I want to, you know, I want to see how you're doing. And so, you know, just tell me about your dogs a little bit. And, you know, I definitely want to hear the story about Slew, because she was doing it by herself that day.
Oh, yeah. Slew is, she's a great dog. Came out of a cross that I had made years back. She's about 6 years old now. There was only three that I raised out of it. Unfortunately lost the others. Kind of bad timing in the winter with the litter and some cold and hot temperatures. And anyways, out of the three that made it, there was Slew, there was Goodnight, and then there was a dog, Frankie. Goodnight, unfortunately, was killed last year in Maine. He just got on a rough bear, and he got busted up internally, and we really didn't realize that he was messed up that bad. Friend of mine, Rob, had him down in North Carolina, and he was up here guiding for like 5 weeks, and it was the last bear, and he was on his way home when he realized he was crashing, and he didn't make it, unfortunately, but just an excellent trail dog. Rob had told me that 24-hour-old tracks were pretty easy for him. Slew and Frankie, the other two, are very similar. Frankie is their flaw, and I'll just be honest about it. I have some tight mouth stuff in my dogs that I'm working around, cold trailing wise. Now, when they're up with a bear, they're barking. But cold trailing, I have to be very careful in my crosses to not get silent trailers. And this was one of the first crosses I had made before I realized I had that issue, and it kind of opened my eyes to it. But Slew is a silent trailer, and Frankie is a silent trailer. But Frankie's about it. He's really too gritty, too much nerve. Been busted to pieces, but his through all of that is just maintained amazing speed and great endurance, long distance, 20-mile races, catching the bear all by themselves. Slew's the same way. Just doesn't matter how bad it gets. She's there till the bitter end. Real nice little dog.
Yeah, she had the bear caught, and you said that she had come back within 450 yards, and you put the reinforcements with her, and I guess that's when they took it into that
down into the bog.
Yeah,
down,
that you said, yep. And got it treed.
Yeah, it was kind of a one of Slew's strengths is her trailing, but because she'll trail silent, you know, and I actually had a young male there that I'll get into a little bit later. He was with her, and those two were trailing, but it was kind of interesting to me. They were trailing parallel, but on a similar course. They would crisscross, they would intersect, almost like you see sometimes with a sow and a yearling or a pair of yearlings. But I knew this bear that they were after from, we had it on camera, and it was a nice boar, a couple hundred pounds, just a single boar. And, I couldn't quite figure out. Sometimes there's other bears that travel these same areas. So they were trailing together. Well, they finally came together, and Slew was out ahead of him. And, of course, she was silent, so he didn't cast to her right away. Well, when she was finally barking, you know, you pretty much, when she's barking, you load your gun and you go to kill a bear. And she was barking 80 barks a minute, and I said, oh, boy, she's got him. And she took him down to Buffalo Stream, and I was hoping he wouldn't cross, because it's takes about 45 minutes to drive around, and by the time you drive around, they're usually gone, and it leads down into this pond, Brandy Pond, which is a massive bog around one side of it. It's really inaccessible. With clients, it's really hard to kill the bears once they get in there, so I was hoping to catch this bear. You know, he was heading that way, and luckily Slew brought him up onto you know, this is a little history, I love history too, and this area is kind of neat. It's known as Riceville was a ghost town in Maine. It's on the kind of the weird and abnormal stories about Maine, you can find it. And there was this Baker family. This is out in the middle of nowhere. There was this hill, and it's called Baker Hill. It was a homestead on it, and there was a tannery on the banks of Buffalo Stream. And back in the early 1900s, one day somebody came, the tannery had burned, and there was about 150 people living there. And somebody came one day and everybody was gone, and there's stories about corpses laying around, you know, and but there's still remnants of that town there. But it's out in the middle of nowhere, and this is where Slew was basically baying this bear. And she brought it up onto Baker Hill, and there's one old road that goes up to where the old apple trees and the clearings were. And I got up there and the wind was blowing, and unfortunately I had two females or three or four dogs loose with me just walking towards her. And unfortunately the wind changed and she went back down to the river. And it was about a half an hour later, she started to come back up. And I had actually started walking back to the truck. And when I saw her come back, I said, I'm going to get these dogs to her, because I'm a firm believer, and if you can get a bear packed properly, you're going to put the brakes on them. And I didn't want this bear to get out of this area, because it was a pretty good area where he was at. And so I just went on foot, and my dogs, they have a pretty good handle on them. So I just turned, you know, I can't even remember right now. I know there was Mando and Pip and Lily, Maple. I had a whole slew of them there anyways, and I headed down in. They finally heard her, and they got down in there, and you know, Slew was baying it, and it made several circles. So it was one of those sort of painful things watching the GPS, like the dogs hit an older circle and they started around, and instead of going right to Slew, they had to make several circles. Well, they finally all got in there, and then it was on. And he made one break for it, and he headed right for Buffalo, and they all put the brakes on him right on the banks. He was treed about 20 yards off of Buffalo Stream, in that big old white pine. So yeah, it was a good hunt. It was a fun hunt. Just worked out well.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, just reading your story, I knew that dog had done a really good job. So I want to go back to the tight mouth. I don't know if you've listened to any podcast I put out, but I'm working with the same issue.
Yeah,
I've got two of my best dogs. They will drift off and they'll be gone. And the next thing you know, my male dog will open maybe a time or two.
Right.
And he will open right before he jumps. My little female, she don't open until she's jumped.
Yeah.
And then it's just like you said with Slew. I mean, it's just cow, 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 cow. I mean, you know, when she's opening like that, you know she's right with it. There's no question.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So what are you doing? You said that you had to be careful. So what are you doing to combat that? What is your process, or what is your goal?
Yeah. Amongst my dogs, like I've kind of figured out, you know, where it's coming from in my bloodlines. And I never breed silent to silent. If I breed silent to open, and I'm talking just cold trailing, because they'll all bark when they're up with the bear. Mm-hmm. But I'm just talking on cold trailing. If I breed silent to open, I tend to get about 50-50. So then selection becomes a major of – it's very important with these dogs. You got to keep your litter close. You got to keep access to it. So if you don't end up with the open one, your buddy has the open one, and you can still breed to it.
Mm-hmm.
And if I breed – open to open, I end up with open. So I just have to be very honest with myself. Now, they're all bear dogs. There's no doubts in my mind about it. But I'm very mindful, and I'm also looking for, this has been ongoing for 2 or 3 years. I'm looking for an outcross that's not going to hurt me. Not a total outcross, something that has some similar blood that's somewhere that I can pick up the strong mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And then breed that back into my dogs. So I'm always trying puppies from friends and trying to see. I like to take a pup right from, you know, 8 weeks old on, because, you know, to just take somebody's word, everybody gauges their dogs different. And it's such a hard thing to put into terms. I believe my friend and I believe him 100%, you know, they're honest about their dogs, but he may allow something I don't, or I might allow something he doesn't. So So I like to start right from pup. So I often, every year, I'll pick a pup up from somebody with the thoughts that this is the possible outcross down the road that I could then breed back into my dogs, but to try to fix that mouth.
Yeah. So, all right. I just want to make sure I'm understand what you're saying. So, if you're taking an open to a tight mouth, and you're getting a 50%, so you're getting more mouth, but you're not where you want to be. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay.
Yes. Exactly.
But now, if you take that dog, that's 50-50.
Yep.
And you breed it to an open, are you getting what you want?
I'm getting more consistent, but it still comes down to selection, because say a litter of eight, there might be three of them that are exactly what you want. There might be three of them that are usable, more open than the parents were. And then there's going to be a couple of them that are not what you want at all. So it's still genetically, it's such a dominant trait. It still throws back, even down the road, two or three crosses. If you're not careful, all of a sudden you can pop into a bunch of silent trailing dogs again. Mm-hmm. So I'm forever mindful of it. But I have definitely improved the open trailing in the dogs, but it's still not, doesn't happen overnight. You know, it's a journey. It takes time.
Yes.
It's a process. You got to keep, and you got to be ever vigilant. If you drop the ball just one time, you just set yourself back 6 years, you know? So yeah, one selection is everything with breeding. One wrong pick on a cross, and if you go with that, and all of a sudden you might be 2 years down the road and say, I blew this.
Yeah, it takes 2 years to figure it out, doesn't it?
Yeah, doesn't happen overnight. Yeah. You know, you think, man, I got it here, and then all of a sudden a couple of years into it, the dog starts tightening up on his mouth or something changes, and you're like, ah, good golly, I thought I had it.
So when you go to the outcross, or you want an outcross, but you want it in it, you want a family, some type in the 5, 7, 6, 7 generation.
Yeah. Something like that. If I can. Now there's a couple of different bloodlines that I'm very interested in. I'm ever mindful of speed. I like speed. Speed catches bears.
Yep.
I will say the dogs that I have now, they're a little weaker on speed than what I started with probably 10 years ago, 20 years ago, whatever you'd say. But I have gained on the stick and the nerve.
Hey, don't hit that fast forward button, folks. I've got something I want to talk to you about real quick. I'm not trying to sell you anything. I know you're tempted to go ahead and fast forward here, but this is a very special week, and I want you to hear me out. This is the week of Veterans Day. Our United States military members have sacrificed life and limb and personal freedom to move about, to serve, to preserve our freedoms. And there are several thousand of veterans out there who are looking for opportunities to hunt and fish and get plugged into the outdoors, to get them off the couch, to re-engage in society, and hunting is a great way to do that. There are also thousands of kids out there who are Gold Star kids who've lost a mom or dad. Both of these groups, veterans and Gold Star family members, are deeply impacted when they can get their minds off of their own grief and sorrow and heal mentally and emotionally. And I've seen it personally when we engage with Freedom Hunters and get these veterans and Gold Star family kids back out in the outdoors and hunting. It's not a big deal. It really isn't. It's as simple as you going to houndsmanxp.com and going to the Freedom Hunters link on our website and becoming a volunteer. You don't have to be an outfitter, professional hunter, or you don't even have to put them up in your home. You just need to make yourself available and say, come and hunt with me. Come and watch my hounds work. Let me plug you into a part of hunting that you've probably never seen before. It could be a local veteran that Freedom Hunters will set you up with. where you can meet them at a corner store somewhere. They're going to stay in a hotel, or maybe they're going to drive home that night. And you're just going to take them hunting. That's all there is to it. So please join Houndsman XP in honoring America's heroes. You can make a commitment to freedom today by going to HoundsmanXP.com and finding the Freedom Hunters link and going to freedomhunters.org. Fill out that application to get involved. If you have any personal questions or if you want my personal experience with Freedom Hunters or taking veterans on these adventures, then just drop me a line, direct message, messenger, or through my email at chris.houndsmanxp@gmail.com. I promise you that you will walk away from the experience rewarded and feeling very good about introducing another person to this lifestyle that we all love so much. Let freedom ring.
So you're trying to get your speed back that you had years ago.
Yeah, so I don't have bad speed, and every now and then I've got great speed in certain crosses, but what I really need for the guiding is the toughness in those dogs and the nerve and the stick. I don't want dogs getting hurt because that doesn't help your cause, but mm-hmm. It's a fine line, because if you don't have enough and you can't get that bear stopped, you're never going to get a client in to kill it. And when these guys are paying $3,000 or $4,000 for a bear hunt, you know, you have to be able to produce. And sometimes those, like right now in my pack, and this has been occurring, I've been very aware of this over the last 2 years. I have kind of two speeds of dogs. I have some that are a little slower, some that are a little faster. And, you know, if you can keep your dogs all, we can only run six dogs here. Mm-hmm. If you can keep six dogs within 10 feet of each other when they jump a bear, even a big bad boar, they're not going to get anywhere. You're going to put the brakes on them. And if you take away their thought process on a baited up bear, then you can kill that bear. But if that bear's got one dog on him, he's thinking about where he wants to go. He's thinking about how to avoid the roads. He's thinking about how to use the water to slow the dog down, slow the hunters down. But when there are six of them and he wants to go left and there's a dog in front of him, and he turns to go right and there's a dog in front of him, then he tries to go straight ahead, there's two dogs in front of him, you're taking his thought process away. So mm-hmm. with guiding, and we get a lot of our bigger bears stay on the ground, and even frankly, a lot of the 150s stay on the ground. It's just the woods are so thick in that boggy country down there, down east. They'll stay for hours at it. So that nervier dog is worth its weight in gold, you know, to get them treed.
Yeah. So if you, back to your outcross, are you going to take your 50-50 and breed to an outcross, or are you going to take your tight mouth and breed to an outcross?
Well, so that's, I'm soul searching right now, because Slew is probably my top female right now.
Right.
6 years old. So if I'm going to make some more puppies out of her, I need to get pretty busy with it right now. Mm-hmm. So I have access to some semen that's on ice that I've actually gotten some of these dogs. It was used to produce a stud dog with good results. It added mouth and it was pretty strong, the open mouth. And so I'm thinking about taking that next year to her. I think I would be more successful if I took my 50-50 dogs, but right now the best female I got is Slew, and I'd really like to get some more out of her. So I'm a little torn on it, and I'm doing a little soul searching, trying to figure out what the best outcome will be.
Yeah, I'm with you there, because I think we all run into that dilemma. Like, you know, so my tight mouth female, she's one of my best dogs. She's kind of the unsung hero. She doesn't get enough credit, But she's always there, or you can always depend on her. And I'm going to breed her. I'm doing the same thing. I'm doing with an outcross, but I'm breeding her back into the line of dogs that I used to hunt. And the dog is very open mouth. He's still got his good speed. He's got plenty of grit. He's not crazy, but you're not going to run him off. So he's got, I mean, his size, I mean, he's a good leggy hound. So he's got a lot of the checks that I want. And I'm hoping with his open mouth that that's going to add to her, which that's what I want to do because she's like your slew. She's one of my best dogs.
Right.
Well, out of the dogs that I have, she's one of the two best dogs because that's what I'm at. I don't have a whole bunch of other stuff. Just be honest about it. I got a bunch of young stuff coming, but they show glimpses of greatness, and then they go back to being young dogs. And it's like you said.
It takes
go ahead.
3 years, 4 years to get that young dog to where you are right now. I know what I have, and I've got a whole crop of females coming that are just like that. Like, I've seen some greatness, and I've seen some, you know, head scratching.
And I mean, like I said, I've had some issues with my 18, well, they're 19 months old now, and I mean, that's kind of like you said. I'm scratching my head, thinking, okay, I'm confused. What's happening here? I want to go back to that tight. You know, you talk about the tight mount. I've seen a lot of posts on this too. Here recently on some of these coonhound forums and stuff like that. You know, sometimes a younger dog won't even open on tracks until, you know, he figures things out and understands a process, and that's a year and a year and a half.
And you know, I think it's very common for a lot of the young dogs to start to open more coming into their second year, and their third year they become fairly open dogs. So that's a process. Obviously a consideration when breeding. I want the dog that right out of the gate, the first few bears it runs, it's open on, you know, when it's trailing. That's what I'm looking for. But are you going to ignore these other six really good, usable bear dogs just to try to weed through 20 of them to get that one? I don't like wasting time. I don't have a lot of time. Time is valuable. And time in these dogs is a lot of money, you know, to raise 10 of those dogs to find that one great one, boy, I've wasted lots of money. If I can use that in-between dog, I know they're pretty consistent. I know what to expect out of them. I know they're going to open more. That's a tough call right there.
Yeah. Well, I think it's something we all struggle with. If you're honest with yourself, everybody has those questions and searching for answers or searching for the right decision. And, you know, sometimes we make big flops because I do it on a regular basis, or sometimes we make a good decision, or it could even be an accident and it works out. So I'm with you.
Yeah.
I'm completely with you on that. Talk about you said you were going to talk about the male here in a little bit. Tell us about him and what you got going on with him.
Well, so right now I've got about a 50-50 split males and females. So I have an old male. When I took the best dog that I had, was my old Bryn dog. She's dead and gone now. I had took Bryn and I bred to a Laurel Mountain dog of Roy Clark's. It was a dog that Ronnie Bateman and Ira Jones had a lot to do with as well. When I speak of Laurel Mountain dogs, I think all three of those guys are kind of combined in the current Laurel Mountain dogs. So I think some of Ira's dogs have a little bit of that tight mouth, and then mine had some of that tight mouth. So I think, you know, it kind of combined and that affected me a little, but a lot of Roy's older dogs were very open, chop mouth, really very rare that he got a silent dog. So Roy took some of the semen that's about 20-25 years old, and he bred to one of his females, basically was able to double up top and bottom with the dog that the semen was out of. And he made this cross and produced Hank. And Hank was bred to Maine, which was Reaper's. Reaper, Grim, Maine, and Bondo were the four pups that were produced when I bred Bryn to Harry Joe. Mm-hmm. So most all of my dogs I have bred around those litter mates. And so what was interesting to me is when we bred Maine to the Hank dog, it produced open coal trailers. So I know, so when I talk about going back and using that semen on Slough, it's actually an educated guess because I have seen it overpower the silent side of these dogs. And I think it's going to work. So that's a definite way that I'm going to go. But so my males, I have Reaper and I have Grim. They're 10 and a half years old now. Reaper got hurt really bad in training season. Phenomenal cold trailer. One of those dogs that you just dumped him out, and if there was a bear anywhere within 20 miles, you could come back a few hours later and he'd have it sitting there. Just super consistent dog. Well, he got hurt and he was unable to walk for about 14 days, the end of July, and almost to the point I was ready to put him down. That sucker's tough, man. He come out of it, but I haven't dared hunt him since. There was something wrong with his back leg. To the point that he couldn't even move. I mean, he just laid in the heat for 14 days. So he's kind of out of the picture right now, but that was actually good for a lot of these young males that I have. I have a young male off a Reaper and a Laurel Mountain female. I call him Blue. Then I have off of Maine, which is Reaper's sister, and the Hank dog. I have two different cross, well, it's the same cross done twice, but they're a year different. So I have Wicked and I have Mando. And then I've got this one young dog. So this is an interesting one. So the dog that produced Slough, her mother, was Isabella. She was a Shamrock dog Joe Hudson had given me as a 7-week-old puppy. Had a pair of litter mates. Good dog. She's still alive. She's about 11 or 12 years old, probably 12 years old now, still kicking. But at 10 years old, she had a very bizarre heat cycle. I could not get much for puppies out of her. There was only four puppies ever out of her that made it to hunting age. So she came into heat at 10 years old. And I said, by golly, I'd be crazy if I didn't try it. You know, I wasn't hunting her because she was just too old. She had a little bit of a heat stroke issue a year before. So I just hunted her a little bit in cold weather, you know, just to get her out. But for all intents purposes, she was pretty well retired. So I was sitting there at about 12 days in or 13 days in. And I said, you know what? I'm going to walk her over to Wicked, who was off of Roy's Hank dog. That semen goes back to the semen. And he's an open coal trailer. Very nice dog, solid dog, probably too nervy. Not the fastest dog, but a rock solid bear dog. And Izzy was an open coal trailer. So I said, I'm going to put Wicked on her one time. And if it happens, it happens. Well, by golly, it worked. And I got one puppy. And I've been around this gig long enough. Like those old females that are real nervy, you got to be careful with them. When they're 10 years, even 8, 9, 10 years old, and they have pups, like you don't want to fool around. They often have been damaged so much that they have trouble with birth, contractions, muscles don't work right. There's been a lot of injuries. So took her right to the vet, x-rayed her, had one big pup in there. It was breech. So I just said, you know what, let's just do a C-section. And we did that. And out popped this nice black male. And I let some kids that I know name him, and they came up with Onyx. He's coal black. He reminded me of Izzy when she was young, just a live wire running on about 220, almost too much. Annoy you. Well, I'll tell you, I started hunting him, and that sucker, he settled into it to the point that when he was young, my friend Rob from North Carolina, he was working up here this summer, so he went out in training season. And he hadn't seen Onyx until when he left kill season this year. About 5 weeks of kill season, he stopped at my house here, and we were looking at the dogs, and he said, "Is that Onyx?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "He's different, isn't he?" He says, "That's not the same dog." And I said, "I know." He matured, and so right off the get-go, this dog, I dumped him right with the big dogs at a bait. And I didn't have a camera on it. I don't know how old the track was, but I know the dogs had to work pretty good to trail it. And, by golly, that sucker, he got behind him, but he trailed it. And they jumped it and come across the road. And he was way behind, but he come out on the track, barking every breath. Big, beautiful voice. I mean, just rings through the woods. Like, I'm blown away. You know, I'm thinking this is something. And, I've been very careful not to get him on anything that was going to really hurt him. I don't think he has the nerve of wicked. So I try to be careful with those pups that are, I don't want to say soft, but he's not
mature
wicked
enough yet.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. So I've been very, very careful with what I put him on. At times I left him in the truck when I would have loved to have kicked him into a bear race, but I'm glad I didn't, because we fast forward to kill season and we had killed a bear. I think it was like a Wednesday or something. The bears had gotten a little sparse. They weren't hitting real well. And, we run this, one particular bait. We just call it number two Bowie Road. And I can't remember who brought it across the road. Anyways, comes across the road, we dumped them all in, and they treat it. We harvested it. It was a 150-60 pound boar. So the next day we had about a 400 pounder on the same bait. And I said, "Oh by golly," I said, I dumped four out. It was probably a 10-hour old track, 12-hour old track, something like that. And they trailed, and the race the day before, I didn't have it on my GPS anymore, but every time I tree a bear, I tend to save the waypoint on my GPS because it's just interesting to me. I like to see my little flags on there.
Yep.
And I'll just say tree. And I had a tree right. This bear circled about six times around where I'd treed this bear 2 years previously. So meanwhile, Brandon, this is just slow going. They're trailing and picking. And gosh, I like to, when they're really grubbing hard, I'll walk right with them from the bait until they finally take it on their own. It's an encouragement thing. I don't sick them on it, but when they see you there, they hunt a little harder. They work a little harder. And when you see where they're getting scent, and if you know your dogs, you can tell when they've got bear scent, just the way their body actions are. Mm-hmm. And I'll go to that spot and I'll stand there, and pretty quick you'll see 50 yards further. Well, as I'm doing that, I come up, there's been a moose fight right behind this bait. I mean, there's hair, it's all torn up, size of a football field. And I'm like, oh gosh, I'm going to end up with a moose race out of this thing for sure, you know? And so that kind of screwed up the dogs. Well, pretty quick, I look on my GPS and they're right where that bear had circled around, the day before, around that old tree sign on the GPS. And, Brandon says to me, he says, "Guys, this is kind of looking like the race the day before." And I was like, "Nah." And, you know, they were barking pretty good, and now they were barking a little less, but this young male is just going. And I'm thinking, I don't know if he's got a moose or he's got what, but I said, "I'm going to let him rip. I'm going to see what he's made of." And it was like an hour later, I said, where the bear had come across the road, it was in a dip, so I went past it. And Brandon was sitting right there. He saw right where the bear came out. I said, "Show me where that bear come out." And I'll be son of a gun, about 30 minutes later, that dog stepped out on that track, and it was just a few minutes shy of 24 hours old. And we didn't let him go to the tree. It was another 600 yards to where the tree was. But I have no doubt he was trailing. He got messed up in that swamp, and he ended up on that track from the day before. And he was trailing that. And Mando was actually trailing behind him. He's an older dog. He's got another 2 years on him. But this young male was just putting on a clinic on trailing. I mean, I've got to say, I've seen some pretty nice trail dogs, but I don't think I've ever had one that his first year of hunting was tracking something 24 hours old.
That's definitely encouraging, isn't it? And then it makes you
want. Oh, my gosh. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So he's been fun for me. And he's an open trailer, and he has got the loudest voice of any dog I've had in a while. I mean, it just echoes through them swamps. And I've been pretty careful with him. I kept him off some real bad ones, kept him in the truck. I'm glad I did. I'm hoping that he progresses like I think he's going to, because he's only going to get better. And he had a heck of a first year. Probably killed several bears to him. But his trailing, I like a trail dog. And I like to be able to dump six dogs at a bait and have them trail together and jump together. Because mm-hmm. when they can jump within 10 yards of each other, that bear's caught. I don't care. they're gonna put it on him. And actually, typically a lot of years, we don't tree a lot of those bears. Well, this year, some of those young dogs I've got have gotten a little older. They're getting a little more consistent. And I'm able to dump those six dogs at a bait. I'm talking like a 6 or 8 hour old track, you know, it starts getting into 12, 14 hours old. Then you're probably only going to have one or two dogs that can do that. Realistically, but reasonable age track for the conditions. I'm dumping them six dogs, and man, I'll tell you, we treed this, I think it was the second week, second or third week, we killed this boar. We'd been after him for years. And I'm telling you, this dude was a bad customer. I mean, he strung us out over them bogs, this Gauges stream. And I mean, there's a spot out there that's 5-10 miles of bogs. And he'd get out in the middle of that, just shake dogs until there was nothing left year after year. And we didn't know it was this bear. And I dumped them six dogs, and they come across this road, and it's heading towards that Gauges stream. And I said, you know what? It's kind of the edge of our lease in there, about a quarter of a mile. But I said, them six dogs came across the road. All six were in the road at the same moment. And I said, I think they're going to jump them within 200 or 300 yards. And sure enough, they did. And that sucker made it 250 yards and stopped, came up tree. And we run in there, and it was a 500-pound just a bruiser of a bear. He was blind in one eye, no ears left. Canines were nubs. He'd actually been in a fight. There was another big boar on a bait there. He was so full of holes, it was ridiculous. I'm talking 3 or 4 inch gashes that are 3 inches deep. Been chewed up, ripped one of his upper canines. He'd ripped right out of his skull. All within the last couple of weeks, you know, fighting these other boars. Just, I mean, he was scarred. He had this, the way we could identify him, back on the middle of his body, he had about a 12-inch circle that was bald, but it was black. And then what would have been the open wound healed white. The skin was white, and it was kind of shaped like a lightning bolt.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was, you could see it in every picture, you know, and we treed that sucker. And I'll tell you what, when they jumped him, I mean, he only made it. It was, I don't remember if it was 250 yards or 160 yards, but it was quick. And I mean, it was a battle. I'm not going to lie to you. I took some hits, and three of those dogs were out for 3 weeks. But when I can kill a bear like that, that's exciting to me. That's one of the coolest bears I've ever killed with my dogs. It wasn't the hardest hunt, but the plan worked, came together. And, you know, I like when them dogs can stick together. So I'm always trying to pick dogs that I can dump like that. And when I got a bunch of trail dogs that I know can work that track, because, you know, a lot of the times they jump these bears out in these bogs. And when they jump them out there, you can't there's no roads. There's nothing to help them for hours.
Yeah, it is what it is, right?
It is what it is. And when those bears get comfortable with one or two dogs on them, it doesn't seem like, even if you add a couple more dogs, it doesn't seem to phase them after that. They just keep doing their same thing out there swimming. And so, you know, when you can hit them with those six dogs, I like what that does to a bear race. And we treat a bunch of them this year that I don't think we would have stopped like that. So that was a fun year for me.
Good. And I want to go back to your Onyx dog. And, you know, Mark, I don't think people, I talk about it a lot, that I'm very cautious with my younger dogs. I gauge them as they grow and mature. And I think because of some of the law enforcement, the dog training that I get with that, I feel like I'm a pretty good judge of their maturity level, because I'm working dogs that I have to be able to send in really, really harsh environments and pick bad guys out. And I do that with my hounds too. I mean, I know that if I've got a young dog that can take it or not, and a lot of people don't do what you and I mean, because you're doing it, is you want to turn that dog loose because it's going and it's got so much potential. But you know, in your, you know that if you do that and he gets wrecked, that it's done.
It's done. And I've done it. I mean, listen, I've learned the hard way. And I didn't learn because I'm smart. I learned because I was stupid. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I had a dog, it would be Wicked's brother. So I had a pair of brothers that Roy had given me. I named them Wicked and Muckle. Now, they were 13 months old coming into the opener kill season, and I'd been hunting Muckle all season. This dog was just tearing it up. I don't want to say he was trailing like this Onyx dog, but this dog was coming on. I mean, just, he was nice. And I kept him off of bait up bears all summer like an idiot. Here I am, you know, first week of kill season, we got this big boar bait up out in the middle of one of them bogs 2 miles away, just sitting in the river, and he won't move. I am pouring rain and windy, and I said, man, I said, we got to get him moving. I said, all I had was Wicked and Muckle in the truck, and I said, I'm gonna cut Muckle in. He came a little closer. It was about 800 yards, and I cut him in. And man, he was like a stealth bomber. He hit that thing. And I'm telling you what, it was the dumbest thing I'd ever done in my life. He lasted 20 minutes and he was killed stone dead. Mm. And he got every dog there wrecked. I mean, we killed a bear. It was a 430-pound boar. But it actually, Slew doesn't have any tail now because of that. She got tore to pieces. Bryn got tore up. Holly got tore up. Muckle was, I mean, he stopped one time. He stopped the second time, and Muckle never left it. He was stone dead right there.
Yeah.
And so I learned the hard way. You know, there was a young dog I should have left in the truck. I should have said, nope, just let the girls do what they do. You know, everything was going good. I got anxious, wanted to make something happen. And so you know what? Onyx has been riding in that truck every day this year, and I have not cut him in. I've let him sit right in the truck. And I've had to tone him a few times to keep him quiet when he could hear the bay ups. But he ended up on a couple of bait up. There was a real bad sow that we killed. We thought she was treed. We got in there. She wasn't. She did tree right in front of us. And he stayed in there. He was working around the bay up at about, I'm going to say anywhere from 10 to 12 feet, kind of circling it. A lot of dogs got kind of knocked, nothing bad, but they got some holes in them. They did tree it. I actually caught him when I first got in and tied him to a bush so that he couldn't get hurt.
Yep.
When I realized it was on the ground. And, you know, so I was lucky there. But, yeah, some dogs mentally can handle it. You know, Wicked and Muckle, it didn't matter. Like, you wouldn't have ruined them other than just something stupid. I shouldn't have cut a young dog like that into a bait up sitting bear. That's where I screwed up. But mentally, he was ready for it. I mean, he went in there like a dog that had bait bears his whole life. Like, he meant to kill that bear.
Mm-hmm.
And and he was 13 months old when he died. This dog here, 13 months old, not even close to that maturity level.
Right.
So I've been very careful with him, and I think he's going to be a great dog. He could really help me out in my breeding. I don't want to ruin that dog, so I leave him in the truck.
Well, and I think this too. I mean, you tell me what your opinion is, but I think some of the, you know, when you get those dogs, it's, you know, 6 to 12, maybe even a little bit older, you know, let's give them 14 months, that has not been on a mean bear.
Yeah.
They do one of two things. They do like your Onyx dog. They go in and they run the circle like they should. We want them to do that. Or they think it's the coon out here that you've showed them before, and they can tackle it and take care of it, and that's what gets them in trouble.
And that's exactly what Muckle's story was. You know, I showed him one coon in his life. That was quite a wild thing, so I never showed him another one, but he went in there thinking that he was going to rule the roost. He felt like he was a king, and the bear was the king of the woods that day. So, yeah, one of two things is going to happen, and, you know, you hope, like Onyx for me, really, I'm pretty happy the way he's developing. If you have a trail dog with that kind of ability, you don't want him getting busted up. You don't want him getting hurt. You want to be able to hunt him every day.
Yep.
You know, I have another female, for instance, comes to mind. So I have a pair of litter mates, Lily and Maple. Lily trails pretty nice. Maple won't trail a lick. But I'll tell you, out of all the dogs I have in my yard, you know who was on more bear kills than anybody? Was Maple. You know why? She will bay tight, but she will not ever, she's never had a toenail hole in her. Barks every breath, you know, knows how to cut. That dog is valuable as can be because it hunts every single bear. and it doesn't get hurt. That's the ideal setup, you know?
Yes. Yeah, that's what that's what I would prefer. Mine just be like a little bee running around in circles. Just stay away.
Yep. And you know, the bear that I killed the last week of our hound season here in Maine, that was, we just turned blind on a bait. He was a doozy. I mean, we had no idea what we turned on. We just turned on it, and it was actually so the same cross that Wicked came out of, but it's the younger cross. So it's Mando, and this one is Mako that I gave to my friend Brandon. So he's got that tight mouth deal trailing, and he even jumps sometimes. He can be pretty tight mouth. So he got out on this bear, and he did a bang up job. I mean, I'm telling you, they were in a bog out there. It was 1,000 yards of water. And he swam and he fought this bear baying this thing all by himself. The other dogs were coming, but they were way behind him. He pushed it, pushed it. Finally, they started catching up to him. And then this bear would go back into the water and he would shake half the dogs. And they're still coming, but they were behind him. And finally, I finally got it packed. I mean, it took hours, and got some help to him, and they got him slowed down. And then I got Wicked in there, and they got him stopped and got in there and killed it. It was probably a 400-pound boar, but it was pretty rough where he was at. It was all blowdowns, and you couldn't. I had him at 10 feet, and it took me a little while to even be able to see the bear. And I actually missed my first shot. Charged the dogs right at me, and he was about 5 feet off the end of the barrel when I shot the first shot. And that sucker, he locked eyes with me, and that was when he knew I was there. And I thought I was going to stone him right there. And that sucker sucked his head back and spun. He spun so fast, that shot missed him. And I run right after him because the dogs jumped, and that was when it got rough. And I bet it wasn't 2 seconds for the second shot. Then I shot him right in the head. But in that 2 seconds, you know, $2,000 vet bill on Wicked. So that's the problem with too much grit. But if you don't have enough, you can't anchor bears like that either. So
yeah, they got to be able to stick it, don't they?
Yeah, you know, it's such a fine line. Like, I don't want them ever to get hurt. Like, Maple is, it's so ideal. And she was on that bear. She was the only dog that never got a hole in her, and she was just as tight as every other dog there baying. She just was smart enough not to try to grab a hold of the bear.
Got the brains.
Got the brains, yep. You know, wicked, not so much.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think we've all had them that way. Well, Mark, yep. I really appreciate you sharing your season and talking dog. I mean, I always enjoy having conversation with you because I think that you and I are on the same path a lot of ways and kind of do a lot of the similar things. And I mean, I always enjoy the conversation.
Well, I've enjoyed it as well. And, you know, and I type the stuff in the stories mostly for friends because I'm terrible. I get bear hunting, and for 2 months my family doesn't know if I'm alive or not. So,
that's your letter home, right?
That's my letter home, you know, and I get a little service on a mountaintop and I'll type something. And honestly, it's you talk about that journey, you know, someday, sadly, we're probably not going to be able to do this the way this world's changing. And, I hope my kids can look back at the stories I wrote and the stuff I wrote and say, wow, that was pretty wild, you know?
Yeah. And I hope we can do it we can finish our lifetime doing it. It's what my hope is.
I agree. You know, yeah. Sadly for my son, I don't know, mm-mm. You know, I don't know what's coming.
Yeah. My daughter, I mean, Maddie, she absolutely loves the dogs. She loves to be with them. And I just don't know that she's not probably going to endure the time frame that you and I have. That's for sure.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
No.
Well, Mark, like I said, I appreciate you spending your time with us. And like I said, I always enjoy the conversation, and thanking you for helping us teach, train, and learn.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.